The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show on Wednesday afternoon. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in studio in Lexington, Kentucky, and we do welcome all of you tuning in coast to coast on Sirius 93 XM 209, and of course, this show every Wednesday dedicated to talking with top trainers from around the country, and we have a good one on tap over the course of the next hour. We are going to be joined by Tom Amos in the first half of the show, and then segue into talking with Scott Blasi later on here in the second half of the program. So going to be a good one. Let's get right to it. Tom Amos is on the phone with us here. He's traveling in Florida, so nice of him to take the time to join us here for a little bit. Tom, thanks so much. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mike. It's good to be with you guys. A lot of times driving home from Keeneland, when I happen to be able to stay for the feature race, I've always picked up your show and got a chance to listen to what's going on, which I really appreciate.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for the kind words. And Jude's enjoying a little R&R over the course of the holidays. He'll be back this weekend, so you're stuck with me for the next half hour.
That'll do.
Well, first of all, my condolences on that heartbreaking defeat in the Chick-fil-A Bowl on New Year's Eve for your LSU Tigers.
No, we're not going to go there. that one's still very fresh and very painful, and that was tough to take.
And trust
me. It made watching the other bowl games difficult.
Yeah, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I know exactly what you're going through. The playoffs aren't as much fun anymore.
Right.
Well, you, like fellow New Orleans native Al Stahl Jr., a graduate of Louisiana State University, obviously, and I never had any idea that LSU had such a prolific trainer program.
Yeah, well, they graduate about... Oh, I guess about 5,000 or 6,000 every semester, and they're two, myself and Al.
Well, it must make for a fun little rivalry between you two.
Well, we're good friends. We were roommates in college as freshmen, and actually Al introduced me to the sport when I was about 11 years old.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He gave my introduction. If it wasn't for his family, and particularly his father, who was the head of the racing commission in Louisiana, for him to take the time to bring me out to the track and treat me like, you know, he would treat anybody else and get to see the horse on the backside, that was my real introduction, and that's where it all kind of came together for me.
Well, I'll give you your choice. We can spend the next half an hour telling some stories about that freshman year in college, or we can go ahead and talk about how you got involved in the sport.
Let's go with the latter. How about it?
Let's do it. So Al is actually responsible for getting you involved in racing.
That's correct. I was about maybe a little bit older than 11. Maybe I was in 6th or 7th grade, and Al and I had become friends. We'd actually gone to grade school together up until the 3rd grade, and we reunited at a new school after being apart for a little while. At that time, I guess 6th grade or thereabouts. And, we became friends again. And I really didn't know anything about horses at that time. But going to his house one day, that afternoon, we went out to the racetrack with his father, and I was introduced to the sport. So I was introduced to the sport from the standpoint of a handicapper when I was that age, and I enjoyed it. And I was fluent in reading the form by the time I was 14 or 15, and I really enjoyed it. I really liked it a lot. But after a number of visits to the racetrack in the afternoon, I spent the night at Al's house one night, and we went out in the morning to the backside to see his father's horses train. And that was a real eye-opener to me. To that point, I just thought that they lined the horses up and the fastest one won. I had no idea all the things that went into preparing a horse to try and run his best race. And that morning, my first morning on the backside, quite early, I might add, I got an introduction to that, and I fell in love with it. And it at that time, I realized that that's what I was going to do for a living. And whether it was going to be ride or train, I didn't know. At the time, I owned a quarter horse. I used to ride a little bit. But quickly I grew out of that. So it was going to be train or nothing at all. And that's really what I worked towards until I got my degree in college.
What was your first job on the racetrack?
Ironically, my first job on the racetrack as a hot walker, which is someone that walks the horses around the barn after they've exercised until they've cooled out completely, was in the barn that I currently train out of in New Orleans. So I was 15 years old, and back then, you get your driver's license at 15. And I worked Christmas holidays, again, in the barn that I'm in currently now. Vanberg was the trainer, but really his assistant, because Vanberg's operation was like a Asmussen operation is now. A lot of different stables controlled by different assistants.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular stable is controlled by Frank Brothers. So that was my first job. It was supposed to be about a 12 or 13-day job. I think I made it 6 days before I couldn't do it anymore. And I didn't make the bell the next morning to wake up at 4 a.m. to be out there for 4:45. So I got a real introduction to how tough it is to work out there from a physical standpoint. And the dream may have gone away for a little bit, but it never died. And I came back and I worked summers and did some things all the way through college. So when I was at school, I went to work full time.
And you're still training out of that same barn that you initially started?
I am. Isn't that something? Barn 12.
That's amazing.
First barn I had a job in is the barn that I operate out of.
It's like coming home every morning.
Well, I don't know. All those memories back then, they're not so pretty, some of them. But but I enjoy what I do very, very much. Even a bad day is a good day getting to work with animals. And that's really my love. I like all animals, but obviously I love horses.
So you started with Hall of Fame trainer Jack Vanberg and then moved on to working with Frankie Brothers, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct, yes.
Talk about that experience and what Frankie taught you that you still employ in your operation today?
Well, Frankie had a big operation, so he taught me a few things. Let's see. First of all, he taught me about having a game plan on a daily basis with all the horses, so that when you're dealing with a large number of horses, you set up everything in the course of the day long before that day begins. I still do that to this day. The afternoon before my next morning, after the races are over, I spend lining up and setting up the following morning so that when we get there in the morning, it's very efficient, like it was with him, and everybody's responsibilities are set forward in such a fashion that they don't need to say to me, hey, what do I need to do now? It's all spelled out for them, and they can literally look at the training board, know exactly when their horses are going to train, what they're doing, and when they need to be ready to go out. So it's a formula that he learned from Jack Vanberg, and then, of course, I got from him. An old-school kind of trainer, both. I shouldn't say Vanberg so much because I never really got to know him at all. Although it was his barn, I probably was introduced to him about, at that time, maybe four or five different times at the most.
Yeah.
But old-school in the sense that, those guys, and Frankie certainly as well, they were hard on their health. You know, they were demanding. It was boot camp for a lot of us, and I wasn't used to that. When I was working through high school and college, I was working alongside Al Stahl, and Al's father owned horses, so we were treated with kid gloves. But when I went to work for him, for Frankie full time, then I was treated like just everybody else, and I think it's safe to say some of those days are pretty harsh.
Yeah, looking back on those days now, have you grown to maybe appreciate some of that and some of that strict disciplinarian type of approach?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think anybody that trains certainly has their own style.
Yep.
And I didn't just work for those guys. So I had a lot of different people that I could look back on and create a style that was mine. It's today's world is different. I guess that's the only way I can put it. And I am much more of a person that has mutual respect for the people that work for me. And that's not to say that Frankie didn't. I'm not trying to say that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying his approach was different. Certainly, When I say it was like being in boot camp, you wouldn't say that there was not a respect between, you know, the boss and the soldiers, and there was a respect probably here as well, but it was just different. Now, the way I do it, I certainly can lose my temper when things don't go right and it's something that we can control. But I get over that quickly, and I would say 99% of the time, I treat the people that work for me the way I would like to be treated.
Who had the biggest influence on your career? Was it Frankie or was it somebody else?
Well, you know, Frankie taught me a lot. I don't want to misrepresent that. And he was obviously a great trainer in his own right. I guess winning the Preakness with Hansel would probably be one of the biggest moments of his career. But that's a question you'd have to ask him. I only mention it because his resume was very, very good as a trainer. But looking back on it all, I would think the best year that I spent before training horses was my second year out of school after working for Frankie, when he actually helped me to get a job as a veterinarian assistant. And I got the job with the practice that was the biggest in Louisiana, and we did all the major stables. And so my day became one where we would go to barns throughout the day and certainly do routine work, but we would also examine problems with horses that the trainers couldn't figure out and were relying on the expertise of the veterinarian to help with. So I learned a great deal in that short year of about legs and what problems you can move forward with and train and what problems you need to stop. And I saw a lot of different types of situations with horses, and that's been a big plus for me as I moved down the line to become an assistant trainer for Larry Robidoux and then John Paracella, as well as when I trained on my own.
Trainer Tom Amos joining us on this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, when did you make that decision to go out on your own, and what are some of the things that led to that decision?
That's a great question. I was an assistant trainer in New York for John Paracella, and we just moved down to Florida for the winter. And John was a kind of guy that literally left it all in our hands. He didn't do the day-to-day stuff in the barn in the morning. He just oversaw everything, picked the spots for the horses and did that. But the hands-on type of work, he left to us. So I was in Florida for that winter. I just got married to my wife, Colleen, and this would have been the spring of 1988, and I had probably about 15 or 20 people tell me during my time, when you're ready to train on your own, give me a call, I'll give you a hand. So I had that, you know, in my pocket, or so I thought. And so now, being newly married and, you know, thinking I'm going to start a family, I thought I was ready. And I went back to New Orleans, and I called upon all those people. And of all those people, only one came through, which is a good lesson to learn in life. I learned it early on. And that lesson is, in the end, you know, when you're trying to get somewhere, when you're trying to accomplish something, you can certainly rely on yourself. But feeling like you can be reliant on other people that may have said something in passing, like, hey, you know, I'll give you a horse trainer, something like that, it didn't turn out that way for me. Those people didn't come through. I think they're... Their words were well meant, but when it came down to making a decision, they were very nervous about trusting an inexperienced person. But I did have one person that said okay, and that was a guy named Mike Stevens, who was from Louisiana, and I'd known him from growing up. Mike's nickname was Crete, short for concrete, because his family had all the highway contracts in Louisiana, but it was also that nickname because he was very, very stubborn. And he had hired and fired every trainer there was in Louisiana, including Frankie Brothers. And I knew when I got him that it probably wouldn't be a long-term deal, but I was willing to take anything. And I'll never forget that he gave me my chance. So I started training for Mike, and we had two horses, one really nice horse and one just an average claimer. And then I had a third horse, and this third horse was a horse that I had found and I had bought off of a maiden win. The maiden win was at the lowest level of claiming ranks. But I just thought that he was a horse it looked like he might be improving. So eight of us pulled our money together, $2,000 each. We bought him for $16,000. Not only did that horse get better, but there came a point about 2 months after I started where we ran that horse as a big long shot in the stakes race. And the other half of the entry, which were not coupled, was Mike's horse, Mike's good horse. And Mike's horse was the favorite in the race. This other horse, his name was Fire the Shot, was a long shot. And we ran that race, and the race was a mile and an eighth in distance. And that's where this long shot had an advantage. He liked distance. And so the favorite, Mike Stevens's horse, ran fourth. And this horse, this long shot, won. He won the race.
Oh, wow.
So I knew that I was in trouble with Mike Stevens after that race, having a horse from his own barn beating. But this is long before simulcast and long before cell phones. And back then, we used to turn the phones off in the barn area and put them under lock and key, and they were unlocked after the races were over. So I got back to my barn after winning my first stake race, and I saw one of the kids that was working for me, and the phones were already unlocked, and I asked if Mike had called, knowing it was going to be a bad phone call. And he said, yeah, he called about 10 minutes ago. And I said, what did you say to him? He goes, well, not a lot. He asked me how he did in the stake race, and I told him we won. And he was very excited, and he said he would call you back. What he didn't tell Mike was that the other horse won. So not only was I facing a bad phone call, but I was facing a call that was going to be one where Mike thought he had won the race. So at that point, I waited for that phone call to ring, and it was like my phone was like a time bomb sitting on my desk. When Mike called, after I explained that his horse had won, his response was, huh, which in Louisiana means you're fired. I got fired the next day.
That's a great story.
So,
didn't end
down to one horse
particularly well, but it was a great story.
But that race had caught the attention of Louisiana's biggest owner at the time, a gentleman named John Franks. And John Franks called me the next day when I thought I was really going to be out of business. And he gave me four or five horses. And as fate would have it, they all won when I ran them. And the next thing you know, he loaded me up. And I probably had 30 horses in about a month after that. And we've never looked back. We've been very lucky.
And, you know, you've had so much success in this game since that particular day. Obviously, you've excelled at so many different levels, grade one races, claiming races. What is it about your operation and your approach that's allowed you to have so much success across the board at all these different levels?
Well, without sounding like a stereotypical comment, I have surrounded myself with good help.
Yeah.
I really have always had talented people working with me. I think one of the things that I'm good at is recognizing talent. So, the guys that have worked for me, they're good. They've been loyal to me. They stay with me for long stretches of time. And I think in that regard, I've been very lucky. Other than that, you know, you've got to have owners that are willing to run the horse in the right spot. And that's all about communication. So I think we do a very good job of communicating and telling owners where their horse is and training and where the right spots are to run.
Tom, when you look back on your career, what are the horse or horses that really will stand out to you and that you're never going to forget?
Well, you know, I mean, there've been a few that have won very big races, like Heritage of Gold. You know, that certainly will have a special place in my heart. But remarkably, maybe not. I don't know how other people think. It's been some of the ones that haven't necessarily distinguished themselves. Other than that, they've gone out there and tried every time. I can think of a few like that off the top of my head. I had a filly when I first started named Sweet Agarita, and she won 11 of 13 for me in 1 year, which has to be close to a record.
Wow.
She started out as a maiden $15,000 horse and worked her way up the claiming ranks and won a few starter allowances. Never won a stake, but certainly I loved her. And I have one right now. I have a horse named Eyeball. He just ran this weekend. He ran fourth or fifth. But Eyeball's an older horse. He's a warrior. You know, he's a Louisiana bred. He's about a $20,000 horse. But I really have a special place in my heart for him. So when his when his time is up, you know, we're taught not to get too attached. But when his time is up, I'll put him in my backyard.
Talking with trainer Tom Amos here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, let's fast forward to your other career today. You're very, very good on television, working with TVG. Talk about how that came about and some of the challenges that you've had to face when transitioning into that other career, as I'll call it.
Well, it was pure luck. as a matter of fact, it was Jeff Lipson, who is West Point Thoroughbred's main guy, that got me the job with TVG as an analyst for a Derby show that we're going to do, a work show. And, you know, it's a process. I appreciate you saying that you think I'm good at it. That's very flattering. Not everybody thinks the same thing, but I will tell you this. The tough part of that job is to take your emotions out of it, try to be as honest as you can in what you see, and being able to present that in a thoughtful fashion and not look as if you're, slamming somebody, because I would never want to be accused of that. There's certainly trainers that I like maybe more than others, and I may be commenting on their horses, but I try to be fair. And by being fair and backing up with fact, at the end of the day, I can live with that. So certainly I've had phone calls from people that are friends of mine saying that they didn't think I, you know, treated them very nicely or very fairly on television. But I can tell you, I never let my emotions get in it. I'm always trying to be honest, and I'm trying to put myself in the place of the handicapper, because that's what the show is for. It's for the guys that are handicapping or the girls that are handicapping, and I'm trying to give them solid information. I've been accused a lot of teaching or trying to teach a little too much, but I like that. I think that's my role. So I enjoy that as well.
Yeah, I guess that's where I was going with that question, was some of those things in terms of having to overcome is when you do have to be critical or comment on another trainer, one of your peers, and you have to comment on their horse. And, you know, I can't imagine that would be easy. The thing I've always enjoyed about your approach and your delivery is that you come across as being very genuine on television, and it's very natural. And I think that's a feather in your cap to be able to bring that across on television.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That is definitely my goal. You know, I mean, I get on the show, and especially for TVG and the guys that I work with, you know, and those guys, I will tell you, they, first of all, they're all talented. Secondly, they put their money where their mouth is. You know, if they say they like something on TV, you know, that's the way they're playing it. And a lot of those guys do play the races. And there's nothing wrong with that. I would much rather watch TVG knowing that the guys are on there speaking, anywhere from the host to the analyst, you know, is backing up what they're seeing by you know, playing those selections at the window. So those are my kind of guys, and for my lack of TV experience, they're very, very quick to recognize something that I may do wrong and pick up on that and take care of it for me on the air, so I don't look like a dummy.
Yeah, it's nice when you have good people to help you out. Trust me, I know.
That's right.
Believe me. Tom Amos, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show. Tom, just about 3 or 4 minutes here to wrap up this. It's time flies when you're having fun. We've already been talking here for about 25 minutes, but I want to go back to your family here for just a minute. You mentioned your wife, Colleen. Did you guys meet at the racetrack? Is she a racetracker?
Well, your question broke up a little bit on me. Can you hear me okay, Mike?
I can hear you now.
Going back to
your family and Colleen.
We met in school. We met at LSU.
Okay.
She knew my interest in horses, and she's followed me around the country while I worked towards becoming a trainer and even now. So I was very, very lucky in picking someone that would stand behind me, you know, in good and in bad. And that's the idea behind a union. So it's been good. And we've got two wonderful girls who are now all grown up. Ashley is 22 and a senior at LSU. And Haley is 20, and she's a sophomore at LSU. So we've got two girls in school in Baton Rouge. And, you know, to say that they were raised by her mom is very accurate. So although I'll take an assist, she did the heavy lifting, and they've grown up to be great girls.
Are they involved in racing in any way?
No, they're not. You know, racing, Mike, from my point of view, is a very tough business, and it's a man's world. My youngest rode horses all the way through high school, and my oldest is in broadcast communication and did a little stint with TVG with the help of Tony Alabata, TVG's main guy. And they'll go on to do something, probably the oldest one in sports and probably the youngest one in PR, but it won't be directly related to backside work.
All right, well, Tom Amos has been our special guest here on the first half of the show. Still to come is Scott Blasey. We're going to be joined by him in the second half, so stay tuned for that. But, Tom, really want to thank you for taking the time. Really do appreciate you spending a little bit of time and sharing some stories with us. We could have talked for another half an hour easily, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again.
Mike, it was a real pleasure, and your questions were great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you here soon, and very happy New Year to you and your family.
Happy New Year to you and to your listeners.
All right, Trainer Tom Amos, our special guest here on the first half of Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Always a lot of fun and some great stuff from Tom. Can't wait to talk to Scott Blasey next, the longtime assistant for Steve Asmussen. He's kind of been his right-hand man, and I'm sure there's some outstanding stories coming up in the second half of the show here on Trainer Talk. Don't forget, you can listen to a podcast of Trainer Talk on our website, horseracingradio.net. Make us your home for all things horse racing and along the road to the Kentucky Derby, as we are your exclusive home for the 2013 Run for the Roses. You can see our entire 2013 broadcast schedule on our website, horseracingradio.net. All right, second half, Trainer Talk. It's up next. Scott Blasey going to join us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Racing Forum announces the launch of DRF Breeding. Visit DRF.com today and every day to find in-depth expanded coverage of all aspects of the breeding industry. And look for DRF Breeding feature stories every weekend in all print editions of Daily Racing Form. The DRF Breeding editorial team, led by breeding experts Mark Simon and Glennie Oakford, is based in Lexington, Kentucky, the heart of the breeding industry. From owners and trainers to casual and seasoned horse players, everyone can benefit from the valuable information found at DRF Breeding. This informative content includes up-to-the-minute breeding news, the DRF stallion roster, expanded sales and auction coverage, pedigree handicapping, sire lists, Mike Watchmaker's horses to watch, up-and-coming sires, breeder-owner spotlights, and much more. So check it out today. Visit DRF.com/breeding. That's DRF.com/breeding.
RacehorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RacehorseReport.com. Make RacehorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RacehorseReport.com.
My first win photo, May 9th, 1970. Dad won the feature at Radnor Steeplechase. My most recent win photo, Eagle Poise in the Grade 3 Valedictory at Woodbine. In between, I've bought, sold, and rode champions, Eclipse Award winners, and graded stakes winners. For flat or steeplechase success, go to SeanClancyBloodstock.com.
HRRN Live. Expert handicapping. Jude Feld.
I would string along with the two, Love Stands a Chance. That's where I would go at 7-2.
And now they're coming down to the wire, and it is Love Stands a Chance.
I wouldn't mind taking a shot with the 4 Unlatch or the 5 Grand Arch.
Unlatch and Brian Hernandez Jr. up to take it. Grand Arch was home second.
Jude Feld.
Who wins it, JT?
Big Grandpa.
They're coming down to the final 16th, and Big Grandpa splashed around there all the way on the lead and scores a wire-to-wire win.
Bill in Vermont is our next caller on the line.
Thanks to Jude for lots of winners, picking out horses like Central Banker.
Central Banker emerges with the lead. It is Central Banker.
HRRN Live, Wednesday through Friday, 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern on XM Satellite Radio, Channel 209. Wow, winning.
And welcome back to the Horse Racing Radio Network as we roll on this Wednesday Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show. Mike Penna in studio in Lexington, Kentucky. A great visit with trainer Tom Amos in the first half of the program, and now turning our attention to the native of Independence, Kansas. That's Scott Blasey, the longtime assistant and right-hand man for trainer Steve Asmussen. Nice enough to take some time to spend with us here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. Scott, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, no problem, guys.
Well, look, when we hear about all the success of the Asmussen barn, let's just get this out of the way right now. It's all you, right?
No, we've got so many great people that have worked for us for a long time. I've been with Steve for 17 years, but we've had guys like Darren and Fleming and Toby Sheets has been, you know, Toby's been with us 12 years now. Darren's been with us, you know, 15 or 16. So, and had relationship with Steve long before that. So, you know, we have a very good team, and it's what makes it all possible.
Yeah, 17 years is a long time to do anything, let alone have a relationship like that. So it obviously does work. Talk about how that relationship came about with Steve.
You know, I was taking a little break from college, and I was working for my brother who had worked for Steve. And I was in Oklahoma City, and I went to work for him just kind of as a temporary thing. And just kind of hit it off with him and agreed to take some. This was the first year we took horses down to New Orleans, and agreed to take horses to New Orleans with him. I think they gave us 12 or 14 stalls down there, and just kind of grew from there. Had to beg, borrow, and steal for everything else, but it's been a long build, but it had its ups and downs, and still does.
Yeah, this is a game with the highest highs and the lowest lows, and I know you've experienced so many of those working with Steve and throughout your training career as well. You mentioned taking a break from college. You were studying what, pre-veterinary? Is that right?
Yeah, I was thinking I was wanting to be a vet. When you're paying for everything yourself, after about 4 years of college, you decide there might be some other ways to go, and I was pretty burnt out, and so I just decided I was gonna take a little break, and break turned in 17 years. So
yeah, and take us back to the beginning, because like so many other trainers that have joined us here on the program, you had racing and horses in your pedigree from a very young age.
Yeah, my father trained quarter horses just on a fair circuit level, very small, but you know, that's what, there were three boys in the family, and that's what we kind of did to stay out of trouble. You know, he gave us a lot of responsibility because he had another job as well. But it's just kind of something that gets into your blood. And, I was always happiest when I was in the barn and around horses. And, my dad gave me a good foundation, taught me how to feed horses, and he was a very good caretaker. And it taught us to work. You know, my parents were very, very work-oriented and instilled that in us.
Yeah, I grew up working with my dad. My dad had a business in Massachusetts, and I worked with him. And I know that there's challenges involved with working with family. I'm sure you underwent the same things with your dad, but it's certainly one of the more rewarding things that I had the opportunity to be part of in my life. And I would assume you're going to look back on it the same way.
Oh, I look back on it the same way. We have a rule in our family that we don't do business together. But it's a little volatile that way. But we have great relationship, and it was an outstanding learning experience. And I look back at on how much he just turned us loose with it, and you know, gave us a lot of room to make mistakes, and you know, he was always pretty good about it. So,
how big's your family?
I have two brothers and one sister.
Okay. And I know your brother, Greg, is obviously involved. He's the head outrider at Churchill Downs, so he's actively involved in the sport. What about your other brother and your sister? Are they involved?
My sister works for ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut, and my other brother manages cattle in Newhatta, Oklahoma.
All right. And you mentioned your brother, Greg. I just talked about him being the head outrider. You worked with him and were introduced to Steve through him. Is that right? Am I following that story correctly?
Yeah, Greg was an assistant for Steve, and after he went on his own and took a string of horses up to Minnesota, and I had I needed a summer job, and I went to work for Greg. Well, then when I came back from Minnesota, he didn't really have enough horses to keep me employed, so I went to work. That's when I went to work for Steve.
All right, and what do you remember about that first time you walked into Steve's barn?
You know, when I went to work for Steve, I ate myself out of a job in that area, but it's funny, both of us have, but Steve and I were actually both galloping horses at that time. I galloped horses, I ponied in the afternoon, I set feed, I pretty much, you know, we did everything. It was, we didn't have access to the staff that we do at this time, because we just didn't have the numbers, but it was a... You know, it was a learning experience, and he was just trying to grow at that time.
Yeah, how big was the operation when you first started? We think of Steve Asmussen now, and we think of, you know, horses all over the country and, you know, winning, you know, hundreds and thousands of races. How big was it when you first started?
You know, we had 36 head at Remington Park, and, you know, I remember we were leading trainer the first year I went to work for him there, and then... you know, that's where we had a horse named Valid Expectations that was, you know, definitely a better kind of horse, and we knew that. So that's when we got 14 stalls down in New Orleans. So, and then he kept the barn at Houston at that time. So, at one time, you know, he probably, maybe when I started with him, he might have had 40, 50 head of horses.
Well, how big's the operation now?
You know, it's a lot smaller than it used to be when we were winning 600 races. I mean, we're well under, you know, I'd say we're probably 150 head right now.
Okay. Is that by design at this point?
You know, I think so. I think, you know, just with the economy and how I don't think everybody keeps as many horses anymore. You know, we've had a few clients cut back or choose to get out of the business, and it's just a matter of looking for new clients at this point. You know, it's kind of circled around that we're into a rebuilding stage.
You know, it's funny because you don't think about. You know, but I guess we see this in all sports. We see it with sports franchises where they have to reload. And it sounds like that's the same point that you're with Steve. And when you look back, though, and you look at some of the moments that you've been able to share, I mentioned the highest highs and the lowest lows. You've experienced those highest highs. I mean, Curlin, Rachel, Alexandra come to mind. Talk about some of the high points and the things you've experienced.
You know, I think Carla winning the Preakness for the first time was probably, that you knew you were at that level and competing at that level. That was, you know, that was a very, very big win for us. You know, the way he did it over Street Sense and, you know, how those two horses fought through the wire. That was a great moment. You know, when he won the Breeders' Cup, when he won the Dubai World Cup, that's probably about as high as you can get. And Rachel had came to us. She was already pretty, you know, she was well accomplished, but, you know, to get her to compete at that level, you know, beat the boys three times and, you know, a lot of very proud moments.
Yeah, go back to curling.
You know, the most fun for me is trying to get good race, you know, great races out of those kind of horses, and it's very, you know, very rewarding.
Yeah, how big of a challenge is that, Scott, when you have a horse that's that good, and you're trying to keep them at the top of their game and trying to get them to bring that A game every time they go to the track? How much of a challenge is that throughout their training regimen?
Well, that's the best part of it for me. I mean, trying to get a horse ready for that day. It's, you know, it's the most rewarding. It's, you know, it's what takes the most. I think it's probably what takes the most talent as far as trying to get a big race out of those horses on, you know, every time they walk out of the barn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what motivates you and what drives you every morning, because let's face it, training horses is a 365-day-a-year job, and you have to be motivated to get up and get to the barn early every morning and do this every single day. But I guess when you have horses like Curlin and Rachel and some of the greats that have come through the Asmussen barn, it makes it a little bit easier, doesn't it?
Oh, it definitely does. But, you know, like I said, at this time we're kind of at a point where we're trying to reload the gun, so... it makes you want to, once you've been to that level, you want to be able to stay at that level.
What's your favorite Rachel Alexandra story?
Oh, there's so many.
Nothing like putting you on the spot.
Yeah, that's putting me on the spot. probably my favorite race of hers was the Haskell. The Woodward was a very emotional race because of running her against older horses and knowing what we were getting ready to ask of her, and which was above and beyond, and she gave us her life that day. So, you know, that was a very special moment. You know, I think even between our barn and her, she was just knowing what we were going to ask of her that day, and it was a lot, and she came through.
How about your favorite Curlin moment? I know you mentioned the Preakness Stakes. Would that be your favorite Curlin moment?
Yeah, probably so. You know, the World Cup, it was just a neat experience. You know, I spent 6 weeks over there, and that's one of the few times where, like, you lead a horse over and, like, you know, you never know, but you know they can't beat him. You know, and, like, he was that good at that time. There was no horse in the world going to beat him that day.
Well, so you felt that confident leading him over?
No, yeah, no question. He was just, believe me, he was just that good.
Was it like that?
He'd run through a brick wall and beat those horses.
Was it like that every time you led him over, or was it just that day you just knew?
No, we knew he was a little, Steve and I knew he was a little off the day that he ran in the Haskell, you know, when he was third at Mama, but, you know, he's kind of coming off of that. He had to develop so quickly. You know, his second race of his life was the Rebel, and then the Arkansas Derby, then the Kentucky Derby, then the Preakness, and the Belmont. You know, and he'd had a lot thrown at him. So, you could just tell he was, and you really did. It wasn't anything you noticed in his training. You just knew when you kind of looked at him in the paddock, he was a little different. But from that race to the Jockey Gold Cup, then he completely changed again. So he was back to himself.
Outside of Curlin and Rachel, when you look back at some of the outstanding horses you've been around, and maybe even some of the ones that haven't gotten the national notoriety, what are some of the other horses that will stand out to you and you'll never forget?
You know, I love Lady Tack. You know, how fast she, you know, she won the test and the Ballerina. Went 20 and change at Saratoga. She's just very special filly, very fast. Summerlee. You know, she won the Kentucky Oaks. She's, you know, a horse we trained for Winchell. Coovy, another horse we trained for Winchell. That was, you know, they were very nice, very special horses. Gave us great feelings on some big days. So, just been, you know, been a lot of nice horses. You know, Hot Dixie Chick and Appealing Zophie and, you know, Tafazar winning the Breeders' Cup this year. There's been, you know, just fortunate to have a lot of special moments. You know, Regally Ready was a really cool horse, the horse that won the first sprint last year.
Yeah.
very, very neat horse. And you know, having a champion like my Miss Aurelia that went undefeated and runs as hard as she does every time, you know, she's definitely working her way up there with my favorite. That's for sure.
Yeah, she is absolutely amazing, and nice to see her continuing on the success there from the Asmussen barn. Trainer Scott Blasi joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show here on HRRN. Scott, in terms of the other horses, we talked about some of your other special horses and your favorite horses, but is there one or two horses that you say, man, I'd like to have that one back that maybe didn't quite fulfill the potential you thought that horse had throughout their career, and you'd like to get one more shot with that horse?
They talk about putting you on the spot.
I know, I'm good at that, aren't I?
There's always, I just look back, I think we've gotten way better at it. You know, from just through numbers and experiences and, you know, recognizing what horses can do and which ones, you know, which ones can go long and which ones can't, and stretching horses out that, you know, that probably, you know, knowing what we know now can't go that far. It's just, you know, a lot of this is no science. You just make mistakes as you go along and try not to do it again. So,
yeah. Yeah. Get back to talking about your relationship with Steve here for just a minute. What is it that makes that relationship work and has made you guys so successful as a team?
You know, first, you know, we're really good friends, number one, you know, his family, and, you know, we spend a lot of time together. You know, it's just a relationship where you, if you're going to do it at this level, you know, there's going to be disagreements. There's going to be, like you say, there's a lot of highs and lows, but you just work through things. Like, it's like any other relationship. You just work through things, and you know, at the end of the day, 99% of the time, it turns out really good. So, you know, it's nice. I like our relationship. Steve will come in, and it's nice that he actually doesn't get to see the horses every day. Because he'll see more of a change, or what this one's doing or that one's doing. You know, Steve's very hands on, goes over all the horses every day with all of us. He's a workaholic, and you know, he's hard to keep up with. So you kind of better have that same mentality, or it's not going to work out.
Yeah, and I guess that's the question that I'll hear a lot of people ask: is a guy like Steve, who has so many horses in training all over the country, how on earth do you keep up with all of that?
You know, he just calls all of us. You know, if you've got 30 or 40 in each, you know, in each spot, it's not that many. And like I said, we're way down on horses than from where we were at. So, you know, I think we're trying to, you know, we're trying to focus a little more on quality instead of quantity. But at the same time, you still have to have chances, you know. So I think, like I said, I think hopefully we'll be able to stay at this level. But it definitely takes chances.
Hey, you know, one thing I've always said about Steve and the opportunities that I've had over the past several years to interview him and talk with him is that I think he's extremely, extremely smart. And I think sometimes when you see him on television or we interview him on the radio, his answers are very pointed, they're very direct, and he doesn't need to do any more than that because he's giving you, he doesn't beat around the bush. He gets right to it and tells you exactly what he thinks, and he tells you exactly what you need to know, and I've always admired that about him. What are some things that people might not know about Steve Asmussen that you've really come to admire?
You know, it's like what you just said. He's very straightforward, knows what he thinks. A lot of times he has a different way of looking at things that, you know, that'll kind of catch you off guard. And, you know, but I think that's a positive. I think that makes him who he is, you know. I'll match his memory against about anybody's.
Really?
I don't know what a photographic memory is, but I'd say he's got as close to one as anybody I ever know.
Really?
I've known.
He can remember every horse and.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, I've been riding in the car with him to Keeneland. Somebody call him up. You know, he knows how far they work, how fast they work, when their race is. You know, you should and just be driving down the road. So. And I'm talking about somebody that had 10, 15 head in training, just rattle it off. So.
Wow.
You know, when you say he's intelligent, it's you know, he could probably, if he wasn't training horses, he could probably be running a company somewhere. So.
Well, you know, it's funny because that's what I've noticed with doing these trainer talk shows now for the past couple of months. And every time we talk with really any trainer, but certainly the trainers that are at the top of the game, like you guys are, this is their life, and they can recall every single detail about so many aspects of their business over the years, and they're just so entrenched in being a horse trainer that I'll ask the question, and I'll say, well, what are some of your other hobbies, and what else do you do outside of horse racing? And most guys, and even the ladies, will tell you, this is it. This is what we do.
Yeah, that, you know, with Steve, it's pretty much work and his family. I mean, honestly, if he's not working, you know, he's trying to spend time with his three kids. And, you know, Saratoga's made that nicer because, you know, they come up there and spend the summer and stuff. But you know, he doesn't drink, doesn't have a lot of hobbies. You know, he's just pretty much into his work and then into his family. That's how I'd probably describe it.
And I would imagine you're kind of the same way, or do you kind of have outside hobbies as well?
Well, this job doesn't give you a lot of time for outside hobbies because if you don't, you better go to bed at night. But you know, I'm the same way. I like to try to spend some time with my son, and you know, like I said, you gotta love this job. It's 365 days a year. So
now you do have another trainer in the family with Helen, Helen Pitts Blasey, who joined us on this show about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and had fun spending some time with her and talking with her about her operation. That must make for some interesting conversations.
Nah, Helen's great. You know, she's got the pretty. Her and my brother have the prettiest 2-year-old you've ever seen. So that's usually when I'm hanging out with them, I'm chasing that little girl around. But Helen's great. Does a super job.
Yeah, spoken like a proud uncle. I certainly know that feeling well. And when she did the interview with us, she had the baby right there in the background. She was afraid she wouldn't be able to make it for 25 minutes on the radio because she would be screaming and crying, but she was a perfect little lady for that 25 minutes.
Yeah, Olivia, she is a handful now, but especially since she's walking and talking. But yeah, it's very fun to see her grow up. And you know, Helen and Greg are going to Hot Springs this year. I expect them to do well.
Is Uncle Scott her favorite?
Oh, I gotta be. Absolutely.
Scott Blasey, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Scott, ever any thought about going out on your own?
You know, it's never really came up, you know. It's not like I have any interest in. You know, I have a really good deal with Steve, and he's taken very good care of me over the years. So that makes you kind of happy with where you're at. And it, like I said, to compete at this level, you have to have a lot of tools in place. And so we've worked very hard to get here, and it's not something I really want to run away with from because I've helped build it.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel like you're part of it.
Absolutely.
Who else outside of Steve has had an influence on your career and getting you to where you are now?
You know, it's It's funny. You like being around certain people, or you watch how certain people do things, you know. When I was in Chicago, I looked up to a guy named Richard Hazelton when we had horses around there. I think watching Bill Mott and, you know, watching, even guys like Lucas, everybody has their strengths, and just, those are great people to have been able to be around.
Yeah, that's another great dynamic of this sport, and I talk about it a lot on the breeding end of things, how most of the farms here in Central Kentucky and throughout the country will compete against each other, but
right.
They're also working together on so many levels. And I think it's very much the same thing from what I'm learning with trainers on the track, is that you guys are obviously all competitors, but you're also kind of learning from each other and watching each other's operations. Talk about that dynamic a little bit and what that's like on the backside.
Well, I think I've been very fortunate. Like, I've been able to go to the Midwest, to the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast right now. And there are certain people that make you better, or make you have to do better. So I think with everywhere you go in competing, whether it's, whether you're for training titles or if you're at the highest level, there's people that make you better. And that's the great thing about this sport is you got to work to get better at it all the time.
Now, is most of your family still back in Kansas?
My parents live in Edmond, Oklahoma right now.
Okay.
And, my sister lives in Bristol, Connecticut, and Greg lives in Kentucky, and my other brother still lives in Oklahoma.
So how do you go about getting everybody together for the holidays?
It's kind of tough. We were all home for Christmas last year, somehow. And, then I try to make it home for Thanksgiving, but my parents are, they're retired, so they're a little more mobile now. So they can come and see us, and it works out good. Because I get to see Greg when I'm in Kentucky all the time, and then when I'm in Saratoga, my sister's really close, so it works out good.
That's always nice when you can travel. And
it's never hard to get anybody to come visit you in Saratoga. Everybody wants to come to Saratoga.
Yeah, I grew up an hour from Saratoga, so I know what that's all about. It's certainly a great place to be in the summertime, and you're very fortunate to be able to spend some time up there working with Steve. One more question before I let you go here, Scott. The New Year's resolution from the Asmussen Barn would be what?
Get faster horses. That's our New Year's resolution right now. No, but we hopefully have some babies come around and develop into somebody. But we're just keep working hard.
Yeah, is there anybody we should keep our eye on along the road to the first Saturday in May?
You know, nobody's really stepped up yet, but we'll just have to see, though. They better step up pretty quick.
Yeah, I lied. I told you one more question, but that brings up one more point, that's, one goal that's out there is that Kentucky Derby, and you've won so many big races. Talk about what it takes to win a Kentucky Derby and why that's so elusive.
Yeah, I mean, Nairo, I thought, was going to win it. He turned for home, and, he got ran down by Animal Kingdom, and Curlin was third, so we've knocked on the door a little bit. You just got to get that horse on that, on that day, and everything's got to go right. The Derby's it's an event, so many things come into play as far as 20 horse field and post position and everything like that. But it'll eventually come around our way.
Scott, I hope it does, and I hope it's soon. I hope it's this year, my friend. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be here with us on Trainer Talk. You're always outstanding to me, and I can't thank you enough for that. A class act, and keep up the good work, and all the best here for 2013.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, buddy. Scott Blasi, the assistant for Trainer Steve Asmussen. They do a great job. They made a tremendous team. And looking forward to bigger and better things here in 2013. If you can get bigger and better than what they've done so far, hard to top so many of those moments that they've had. That's about going to do it for us here on Trainer Talk. And don't forget, you can catch a podcast of the show on our website, horseracingradio.net. Also, check out our complete 2013 broadcast schedule. It's up there on the site as we take you down that road to the 2013 Kentucky Derby as your official radio network. It's all at horseracingradio.net. We are back tomorrow, 3 Eastern, with HRN Live, our best of 2012, and our call-in show, 6 to 7. Thanks for listening, everybody.